Welcome to Toxic Tangents, powered by Million Marker. We're here to discuss and answer questions about everyday toxic chemicals in our lives. Learn more about Million Marker and how we can help minimize your toxic exposures at millionmarker.com. And now, here's our latest episode. All right, so today we're really excited to have Jackie Bowen with us with the Clean Label Project. And I'm just going to let her introduce the Clean Label Project. It's her nonprofit. And we just, could you give us a little background and of the Clean Label Project and your overall mission?
Yeah, sure. So Clean Label Project, we're a national nonprofit headquartered out of Colorado, the national nonprofit with the mission to bring truth and transparency to consumer product labeling. So at its core, the way we look at the world is that marketing departments do a really effective job at selling comfort and security. But go figure, you know, tandem LC mass spectrometers and GC mass spectrometers, they don't lie. So we like relying on data and science in order to be able to assess what's truly in America's best-selling products. For me, I'm a food safety and quality systems engineer by training, which I like to tell people that makes me a professional buzzkill at dinner parties. But nevertheless, I feel like I find myself in pretty good company with you guys.
So yeah, we'd love to hear more about your journey in creating your organization. And do you have any kind of personal stories that motivated you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in terms of Clean Label Project, so Clean Label Project was actually founded probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So I wasn't the founder of it. It was actually an investigative reporter that was originally with New Hope Natural Media. What brought me to Clean Label Project was that for 15 years, I worked for the World Health Organization Collaborating Center, NSF International, working on food safety and water quality standards, helping to bring to market different types of certification programs like Certified Organic, Non-GMO Project, Certified Gluten-Free, all of which to me are very personally as well as professionally important and rewarding. However, it's been interesting that over the past several years, as you've seen this proliferation of on-package label claims that I fondly refer to as Girl Scout badges, you see this increase in kind of consumer media and, you know, science kind of like research attention being paid to the links between industrial and environmental contaminants and toxins and their links to long-term chronic disease. The kicker is it's like you see things play out in media all the time. I'm sure you guys see it too, where it's like levels of glyphosate in America's best-selling breakfast cereals, levels of heavy metals in America's best-selling baby foods, levels of BPA leaching from America's favorite sparkling waters into the actual product packaging, you know, and consumers in the court of law, technically, these products are compliant, but in the court of public opinion, it's a different story. So at Clean Label Project, what we look to do is bridge the gap between the two. It's like, yeah, compliance with the court of law, that's table stakes. Compliance with the court of public opinion, that's your true north. Bridging the gap to make sure that you align your true north with what consumers perceive to be actual quality and safety is kind of like, that's the intersection where Clean Label Project lives. In terms of what kind of brought me and my interest to this is having grown up in Michigan, it's one where everything and being a public health practitioner myself, what everything that happened in Flint, Michigan, and then kind of watching all of the studies that have been released since then has been both horrifying as well as, you know, interesting when you look at the underlying, you know, situation. So for those of your listeners not familiar with kind of the Flint, Michigan saga that even to this day still continues, would be that, you know, several years ago, the city of Flint switched their drinking water from the Detroit River over to the Flint River. And in the process of doing so, they didn't use the necessary preservatives to prevent the lead pipes from leaching into the drinking water. It exposed this population of people in Flint to elevated levels of lead in their drinking water. And then what happened? Then all of this public health stuff that happened since then. So with Flint, it was interesting because, you know, you hear a lot about it on the news, and this was 5-6 years ago. But since then, you really don't hear anything about it. But it's interesting because, you know, after Katie Couric leaves, after Anderson Cooper leaves, after the Heal the World, Make It a Better Place concerts are over, then the epidemiologists roll in to figure out what are the actual repercussions of this actual human case study that just happened about elevated lead levels of exposure. Since then, the studies that have been released show reduced fertility levels in women of childbearing age. The percent of children that can read at proficient at grade level in the third grade has fallen from north of 50% to just south of 20%. And even more recently, these children that were exposed to these elevated levels of lead during their most formative years, 25% of children now entering grade school qualify as special education. So the public education school system is literally crumbling under the weight of this exposure to heavy metals. And so it's one for me where it's, you know, you hear of these different stories that all of the stories you hear about related to industrial environmental contaminants, their effect on long-term health is important. But literally, it was one where I didn't grow up in Flint, but it was about 20 miles north of where I did grow up. So you hear some of these stories that also hit home pretty close.
So what motivated you to take the kind of consumer advocacy route rather than maybe a government route or a industry route or within your efforts in your career?
Yeah. So right now it's just a really interesting time to be a consumer with social media. It's one where it's so easy to be I like referring to it as a good troublemaker, so to speak, right? It takes forever. It's like this glacial speed in which things happen from a regulatory perspective. But when you can go into the marketplace and you can test America's best-selling products and see what's in it, and you provide this information to consumers, they can make real choices right now in the food that they provide for themselves as well as for their families. Well, that's, you know, even right now, there's a lot of movement around levels of heavy metals in baby food and potential, you know, regulatory action being taken, which is great. The thing is, it's like when you start talking about, oh, we're going to gather data for 5, 6, 7 years, it's like, okay, by the time my kid, you know, is driving, I'll know what I should feed them for their infant formula. You know, and that doesn't really help anybody. And so for me, it's a matter of, you know, if you can just get directly to consumers using social media, I just look at it as consumer awareness and education can ultimately pull through industry and regulatory reform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting to see this huge, quick response to the coronavirus pandemic. Within a year, something that usually takes 5 to 10 years, they develop something. And if that level of effort is put into this, you know, emergency, which we are experiencing, imagine.
Oh, it's true. I mean, it's one where even on the whole coronavirus thing, when I think about it and I think about just the very limited budget that exists when it comes to kind of public health protection, and then you factor into like, wow, this virus that has, you know, that has a very low rate of, you know, mortality, which is a good thing.
Right.
How quickly and the ease and the speed at which it was able to bring the economy to its knees tells you that it's like, no, we've got some other things that are a very real threat to both the economy as well as public health and safety.
Mm-hmm. Going from that, consumers hear about BPA and maybe PFAS and phthalates and all these chemicals, and we hear about them in the news and we know they're bad, but they can feel kind of abstract or a distant danger, or we don't really know how it affects us. So my question for you is, what's one thing that consumers should know about toxic chemicals in their food and products? And is there immediate concern for these chemicals?
Yeah, I guess I would say the one thing that I found really interesting, especially looking at BPA phthalates and kind of some of the things in the plasticizer realm, is you see a lot of these claims on product packaging saying BPA free. But the thing that's, you know, to me, and you guys will appreciate this, just looking at analytical chemistry reports and stuff like that, is a lot of, I remember one time testing a few products. Actually, I'll use this other example, looking at protein powders. And over 50% of the best-selling protein powders had measurable levels of BPA. Now, the thing that's interesting is so often when people talk about BPA, they think of it as like, oh, we use BPA-free packaging, and therefore that means our product is BPA-free. It's not necessarily the case. It's like BPA can exist all across the supply chain. You know, within food production and industrial food production, you have drying racks. You have, just like how you have wax paper and things like that within your home that you use. Same type of thing exists within industrial food production. And so it's one where just because you control for the finished product and use BPA finished packaging, it doesn't mean that unless you use and ask more questions of your suppliers further up the supply chain, there could be contamination taking place further up the road too. So it's a matter of being a cynical consumer when they make claims, ask questions and demand answers. Because sometimes it's like BPA free of like, okay, yep, your packaging is completely BPA free, but your BPA contaminated whatever happens to be doing a real number on your BPA free packaging. So it's not just about the packaging that's the problem. It's interesting because BPA also serves like, and I don't think people understand this, like BPA actually serves an important role. I completely understand why industry uses it. BPA is a liner in different types of packaging containers that help extend the shelf life. And 80% of the food industry uses what's called co-manufacturers. Co-manufacturers, you're actually a brand, but you use another facility that actually does the food production. And the way that it works is that when you're doing food production, you can do a larger run. In other words, produce more products at one time. And you get a better rate at that. It's just about leveraging economies of scale. The kicker is that by doing that, you're going to have more product that's going to sit on a shelf for a longer period of time. So the benefits of BPA, it actually extends the shelf life by making sure that it doesn't start to have the product doesn't start to break down. So industry, you know, that are making those choices in packaging are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Okay, we can use the non-BPA packaging, which is a little bit more expensive. I'm also going to have a shorter shelf life. Or I can use the BPA lined packaging that ultimately I'll be able to save money on the food production process as well as have a longer shelf life. But nevertheless, also comes with the risk that obviously once it starts to break down, you have the packaging migration issues. So BPA is a really interesting chemical to watch. So often people do when they're doing testing of their food products, they look at product stability and they look at safety and they look at microbial contamination and things like that. Oftentimes they don't look at how is my packaging actually breaking down as part of that process.
To hear more about Jackie and the Clean Label Project, please stay tuned for the next episode. This episode was produced and edited by Jiaxing Feng. Theme music by Joe Rochester and Grady Harper. Visit us at millionmarker.com to learn about our test kit and other services. Read our blog posts on a variety of topics, ask a question that you'd like answered, or suggest a topic for us to discuss on the show. Thanks for listening!